and have a comment, a criticism, or a suggestion, throw in some faint praise, and then email it all to bigpicturescience@seti.org.
All right, let's go with Chinese food.
I found tiny fool.
Ethiopian fare.
Easy, hope there.
Pizza. What about pizza?
I found 12 pizza places near you.
Yes.
Hi, we're the Last Broadcast.
And you're listening to WHFR,
the only radio station making waves.
Hey, you cut off that FM.
Yeah, did I?
Hey, this is Adam from Lucky Boys Confusion, and you're listening to the only station making waves, WHFR.FM.
The views and opinions expressed on the following pre-recorded show do not necessarily represent those of WHFR or Henry Ford College. Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Cindy Gray, and she's a multi-talented person. She's a yoga teacher, writer, and handwriting analyst, among other things. But I just want to say thank you for doing the show today, Cindy, and how are you?
Thank you for having me, and I'm doing very well.
Great. All right. Basically, we're going to talk about yoga first because I guess you have started something that's a little bit different as far as your yoga teaching goes?
Somewhat, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Can you give us some details on that?
Right. Well, when I wrote my first book, The Spirit of Health, which was over a decade ago, I was doing research for it and putting a lot of my thoughts and feelings into it and a lot of my instincts. And in so doing, I started writing about ancient wisdom that seems to be kind of resurfacing in people's consciousness and the changing paradigm of people and evolution, spirituality, and so forth. And I was including information in there about something called sacred geometry, but I didn't really know it at the time. I didn't know the words for it, and I didn't really understand what all I was grasping and routing into that book. And over the last, I would say 3 years, I have been more and more drawn to trying to figure out what is this thing called sacred geometry. And I'm not a mathematician. I've never been involved with math.
Yeah,
I'm
math.
Lucky to all use right. a calculator, and my calculator's solar. So if it's a cloudy day, I can't even add. But anyway, I kept having in my mind the idea of Leonardo da Vinci's poster, if you will. It was, it's called Vitruvian Man, is what it was called, or is called, and it's called the Canon of Proportion, or the Canon of Man. And I kept thinking that would be really nice to include in a yoga studio, or to include that imagery of that person in that position. And I couldn't figure out really why, and I kept being drawn to it. So I started researching that, because I thought, well, what is that called? And why did he paint that? And what's the genesis of all this? And basically, that connected me with the concept of sacred geometry. I've heard about it. I've read a lot of stuff, like in Body, Mind, Spirit magazines and things like that. And you see the terms, but I never really understood what it was, and I never researched it because I saw the word geometry and I backed away.
Yeah, that was that, yeah.
Yes. So ultimately, in reading about Leonardo da Vinci's Canon of Proportion of Man, I've learned a whole lot of things about sacred geometry. And as I was reading this, I thought, my God, this sounds and feels almost like an ancient memory to me. And as I was reading it and starting to try to understand it, because it's complex, it's very simple, but complex, like things can be kind of esoteric, I started thinking, my gosh, I've written similar things in my book about that. I remember feeling these things, thinking these things over a decade ago when I wrote The Spirit of Health, Mind to Toe Self-Care for Women. So I started digging through my own book and thinking, wow, I was making references to some of these concepts, but I didn't know that's what it was called. So, in so doing, I thought, all right, so we've got this guy in this position with his, you know, bodily shapes there. What is it? And I learned that Da Vinci, because he was a genius.
There's yes,
a fine,
he was.
Yeah, a fine line between crazy and genius, right? And he would write in mirror writing. So if you put that painting or that poster, I have the poster now, a big one of it, because I've been staring at it now for 3 years. If you put that up to a mirror, and if you happen to speak Latin, you would see that it was mirror writing. He wrote it, not backwards, but if you showed it into a mirror, you could see it written regularly, but in Latin. And there's text at the top, there's text at the bottom, and then there's the image of the man with his arms straight out, capital T position. There's two images of the legs. One is straight out and one's out further, different degrees, different angles. And what's at the top is him talking about Vitruvian, which was an architect back in the 1500s that was inspirational to Leonardo da Vinci. And he is the one that spoke to da Vinci about the proportions of people's faces, shoulders, arms, etc. So the text at the top of this painting is to do with Vitruvian. The text at the bottom is primarily information about, for instance, that shoulder width. If you measured your shoulder bones from shoulder to shoulder, times it by four, you'd have your height. All these different harmonic proportions is what that was about. And I thought, my gosh, how could this apply to yoga? How does this apply to anything? Well, I started reading about sacred geometry and about how all things begin as a circle, as a sphere. The egg, the ovum, all life begins as a circle. Now, whether that life forms into a human or a blade of grass, a butterfly, a tree, it just depends on which way the molecules go, or the atoms, rather. So I learned that there is a formula behind the development of the atoms, and it's the same formula for everything. Everything and everybody and everybody. I got really blown away by that. I thought, does everybody know this and I don't know this? How come I didn't know this before? I didn't take trigonometry. I didn't take geometry. I got basic math. I probably failed that. I went to Catholic school. I was taught girls do reading and writing, boys do science and math. And I really got ripped off in that regard. And so anyway, I started applying sacred geometric terms to my yoga teaching. That's the short answer.
That's a short answer? I would hate to hear the long answer, but no, that's interesting, though, that, I mean, it breaks down to that dimension where everything is, well, it really is based upon just measurement, and it is truly universal, and the fact that it is true for every living thing or anything, it's amazing, quite amazing.
It is amazing, and what I say to people is, have you ever felt a deep interconnection between yourself, other people, animals, the earth? I'm involved with a lot of yoga types, if you will, yoga people. A lot of yoga people tend to have quite a strong spiritual side, not to stereotype, but I've been teaching yoga since the 80s. I started studying it myself in the 70s in high school. So
you were a pioneer, kind of. I mean, it's very popular nowadays.
And it's growing and growing more and more because people are seeking. People are seeking answers. They're seeking a deeper connection to the best version of themselves they can find. And I believe that's what yoga provides to people. So when people say, you know, I've always felt this deep connection with the earth and with the animals and all this, sometimes it seems idealistic. It can seem mystical, esoteric, all these words, you know. But the thing is when you read about and begin to understand even the basis of sacred geometry, you learn that's the recipe. That's the recipe for the web of life. That's the recipe or the formula for the interconnection of all beings. And when you said it's universal, that is literally, it is universal. NASA proved, when was it? I think it was 2003 or something. I don't quote me on that. But that one of the, there's five Platonic solids that Plato, I won't say he invented them, but he first spoke about them and drew these geometric forms, triangle being one of them, tetrahedron, octahedron, all these hedrons, right? There's five of them, the main guys, main players. And one of them, dodecahedron, I think it is. It's a very long word, and you'd recognize the shape and the symbol. Well, they've determined that that is the shape of the universe. The universe. Yes.
Well, I didn't think the universe had a shape because it's supposed to be, you know,
infinite.
Infinite, right.
It is, but when you plot it out and connect the lines between the various, for instance, the Milky Way is where we're at right now in our galaxy. When you plot these lines out, it forms a geometric shape. That's what I mean by that's what the universe looks like, mm-hmm. basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting, too, the drawing that you're talking about was also sent up into space by NASA along with other information about beings here, and that drawing was to help give perhaps other life forms on different planets and different galaxies or wherever that satellite ended up,
okay.
they would know about people on Earth.
You mean Da Vinci's
yes,
drawing?
Da Vinci's drawing was
sent. I didn't
sent.
Know that.
I don't know how it was included, whether it was just some type of, you know, digital information
right.
or whether it was the actual drawing, but I know that information was contained when it was sent out in hopes of perhaps reaching another planet or whatever that, other life forms would know about us.
I didn't know that. I have to read about that. I have
yeah.
to look that up. That's really important.
I forget how many years ago they did that, but I remember that was included.
I'll be darned.
So it is a very important thing, even though you kind of look at it and you think, well, it's a nice drawing, you know, it's interesting, but you don't realize the significance of it
yes.
until you research it like you did.
Yes. I've been very blown away by this information. I've had points where I've had to reread and reread in order to get this in my head because it's so large, this information. This is goosebump material. A friend of mine out west calls it God bumps.
Okay.
Yeah. And some people call this the God theory. This is what all this connection is. I don't know. Now, when you apply it to yoga, and there may be some listeners who are thinking, all right, let's get back to yoga because they're interested in yoga. What's the deal with that? My thought with yoga is as people stand in mountain pose, which is just a basic standing pose, it's the foundation of all standing poses. It's not simply just standing there because you root yourself and it's a very powerful way to there's a lot of thought in it. A lot of focus goes in Tadasana or mountain pose. But when I would stand in mountain pose, I kept having that image in my mind of that drawing. And so when I've learned about this, then I realize that there's some people out there that have been connecting yoga with sacred geometry. Now, I couldn't find hardly any information on the link, but I know that it's profoundly valid. And I might end up writing about that someday. You can smell that coming, can't you? I found two sources of information on it. One is a book by a guy named Samuel Palmer called Hatha Yoga and Sacred Geometry. It's an ebook. It's 172 pages, beautiful graphics, absolutely beautiful graphics in color. I bought it, $25. I printed it twice because I have one set I want to be able to pull things out and use them on posters and chop some of them up and blow them up for displays and things. I did a presentation on this up at the Song of the Morning Ranch, which is a yoga retreat up in Vanderbilt, Michigan, north of Gaylord, north of Grayling, and then Gaylord, and then there's Vanderbilt. It's 25 miles south of the bridge, and it's on an 800-acre, it's on 800 acres in the Pigeon River State Forest. Beautiful place. And they have three geodesic domes. Are you familiar with geodesic domes?
Somewhat.
They're quite spacey looking, and they're basically built out of triangles, thousands of triangles, all structurally put together for this amazing round building. So I did a presentation there on sacred geometry and hatha yoga, although we did it outside because it was a beautiful, beautiful weekend. They hosted Yoga Fest. Now, I've been teaching for a long time. I've been in Michigan for years. I never knew about this yoga retreat place till about 2 years ago. And I started Googling because I wanted to do something special. I thought, I want to treat myself and go to a yoga thing myself, right? So I went to Yoga Fest 2 years ago. Was very impressed by it up there, just blown away by this dome. And then this year, I've said that I would be willing to do a sacred geometry class. And so that's what I did. I volunteered for that. And it was very successful. A lot of people said they felt real deep, profound connections in the positions because when you start recognizing different shapes and patterns that are these universal shapes and patterns, for instance, spirals, like the nautilus shell is the classic example of this of the spiral. The cochlea in our ear, our inner ear, is the same shape. We have all sorts of these universal, cosmic, wild shapes within our own bodies that I never connected to this sacredness. I always knew the body was holy. That's our temple and all, you know, and let's hope we take care of it, right, because it's our temple. And, well, that's what yoga was invented for initially, is so people could be physically strong enough to sit for really long periods of time in meditation. That's what it was invented for about 5,000 years ago. So anyway, I did this presentation up there in a class, and it was very powerful. I've learned to do what's called a pyramid gaze. And when you think about the horizontal line between your two eyes, that's the base of the pyramid. When you think about the third eye, which is between the eyebrows, a little bit just above there, that's your psychic center. Also, the pineal gland is behind there. So there's endocrine involvement with these chakras. It's not just esoteric ideas for chakras. There's actual glands that are in these same areas. Sacred geometry recognizes the chakras and their positioning in the body. It's like the earth has longitude and latitude lines. We have those same lines in our body. That's part of how acupuncture and acupressure works. We have similar lines in our body. We are very, very linked to Mother Earth. And sacred geometry is based on actual geometry, which that's why I say I've had to reread it over and over again because my mind does not process math like that. But right. There's something called the Fibonacci cascade or sequence of numbers, and also phi, P-H-I, which is different than pi. And when you say, for instance, someone might YouTube, or Google on YouTube, something called Revelations of the Pyramids, you'll find that this formula is the basis for the measurement of the pyramids and the building of the pyramids. Now, they don't know if it was a coincidence, if it was something from ancient aliens, how they were learning to do this back then, because this was long before Fibonacci, even in the 1500s, and Da Vinci and so forth. But yeah, a lot of these areas, Stonehenge, for instance, all of this math is the same bloody recipe. That blows me away.
Yeah, very interesting. And briefly, I just want to say that you are listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My guest this month is Cindy Gray. She is a yoga teacher, writer, and handwriting analyst, and we are talking primarily about yoga right now. I think that's getting back to what you were talking about, is the numbers don't lie. It is a universal truth.
Yes.
And I think that has been proven, obviously, from what you've pointed out. I know Stonehenge is, I think they could tell a calendar or something from
it.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of different things came from that, using the numbers and, you know, the Earth's rotation and this, that, and the other. But I mean, very interesting. And they have speculated that aliens might have been involved with the building of the pyramids, you know, in Egypt, because, right, like you said, they certainly didn't have the tools and stuff to put it together. I mean, it was very labor intensive. It's not like now. I mean,
and very, it'd be a little bit easier,
right? And the numbers again don't lie. So I mean, right, that is truly amazing. And now you can learn geometry and some more stuff. So that's good, right?
Well, it is. And the reason it's called sacred is because there's a holiness, there's a sacredness about these various things, the architecture, the artwork. It's more than just in mathematics and geometry. It's the proportions of the human body, the proportions of many other animals, too, even the spiral of some of the horns on certain animals. Plants have the same math involved. For instance, if you were to look at a sunflower, and you would to see it, and you would look at the center of it, you'd think, how does that sunflower know to grow in that pattern? Pine cones, pineapples, all sorts of different things are shaped like that. And the very center is developed a certain way, so as the exterior grows, it doesn't, that it, so that it gets water, so that it also doesn't create shadows, so that the other parts don't grow. It's like economy of scale, so that it can grow in the best way that it can to further the species, basically. Everything's about furthering the species, right?
Right. Well, that helps, you know.
Yeah. DNA, it's found in DNA. The solar system is found, sacred geometry is applicable to that. Art, architecture, music. When you break down music, it's broken down into fifths, and that's a Fibonacci number is the fifth. It's pretty amazing. I'm really moved by it.
It really is. And that is one thing that I guess numbers hold the key to just about everything then.
Yeah. So I have to go back to school.
Yeah, right. Well, now I'm thinking too, because I was very weak in math. It was a struggle to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe I should start studying that, because that is very interesting how it all correlates and how it all works together. And it is really, truly amazing when you think about it. You know, it's just mind-blowing.
Yeah, I've been very moved by this. I've stayed up to the wee hours of the night reading things. My husband's like, are you still reading about that? I said, I'm still playing it over and over in my mind so that I can understand these concepts. Because mm-hmm. I never thought myself smart enough to know that when I was a kid. I really didn't. I was really into reading, English, writing, that sort of thing. I never thought I'd need math. I was never really even thought I'd need to learn to type. Then I became a court reporter a long time ago, so I had to make my living doing what I didn't want to do. It shows up in relationships throughout the universe, this formula, and it's the same formula. So I would encourage people to check it out.
Mm-hmm. Take a course in geometry and...
I don't know that a course in geometry would include sacred geometry.
Oh, no, but I'm just saying getting the basics to understand certain principles,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Exactly, like what ratios are, what rational and irrational numbers are. All this is new to me, and there's probably some listeners who might be very academically oriented and so forth and thinking, really, you're just now learning this?
Well, I'm with you. Like I said, math was never my strong suit, so I'm weak in that area.
Well, there's a lot to learn, and I'm figuring out that we are a lot more interconnected than I ever thought before. I thought it was like, I don't know, I hate to discount love and all that. I thought it was a spiritual connection, but I'm learning it's also part of the physicality of it, you know? And the breathing aspect of yoga also applies to this in a way. From what I read, when the first few weeks of life, when there's a newborn baby, the fontanelle, which is the soft spot on the top of their head, because the plates of the skull have not grown together yet, so there's that mm-hmm. soft spot. Everybody knows about the soft spot of the baby's head. Don't touch the baby's head. Well, if you look at that and really look at it, you can see a pulse. You can see the baby's pulse at the top of their head. Well, you turn that little baby over, or not over, but you look under, and on the perineum, which is the space above the anus, between the anus and the he or she's private parts, if you will, there's a pulse also, and they're pulsing in unison. It is their own north and south pole. And it blew me away. I never knew, I'm a mom, I never knew that. You know, I've never read that anywhere. And apparently during cell division, the cell starts out as the one circle, the ovum, if you will, and through zygote, I think it's called zygote, the cell splits. And then it splits again, and ultimately it forms, in a way, a cross, which is another sacred geometric shape, is a cross. Mm-hmm. And so you got one cell on top, you have the cell in the middle, a cell at the bottom, and two on the sides. The one at the top will ultimately form the head further on down the line. It's the north and south pole of that child, and or whatever it's going to turn out to be. Could be a rabbit. I mean, who knows?
Right. I guess you do never know. But again, it's quite amazing. Now, how do you try to apply this to yoga again? I mean, I know you used the one pose you said was the mountain. Can this be transferred to other poses? How would this work?
Yes. It can be transferred to, because it basically represents life, and yoga is a life discipline, if you will. What I first teach people to do, and I've been doing this for years, but I never knew how sacred it was till recently, is to root themselves. When they're standing in a mountain Tadasana posture, to envision, first of all, that there's a hula hoop of energy, just like there's a hula hoop that they're standing in. That's their auric field. 2 to 3 feet around them is the electromagnetic field and frequency of the person. To envision that, to stand with the feet completely wide open, to open the toes, to send the belly of the foot, if you will, the very center of the arch, toward the earth, to envision that someone may come up and push you from behind. So you really plant yourself. There's a lot of focus in your head for this. And to envision little roots, just like you see a little, you could in a terrarium, you might be able to see the soil from the side view of the glass. The little roots begin to grow down. Envision those coming out of your feet and connecting you to the earth. Then you envision this invisible tube that isn't necessarily the spine. It's in concert with the spine, but it's more profound than that. It's the same tube that has that baby breathing perfectly. That's what that example of that baby breathing is its perfect breath. And we learn as we grow and get older, we become more shallow breathers. So to envision this opening, if you will, on the top, which is the crown chakra, opening up, and basically you're uploading earth energy and you're downloading spiritual energy through the skull, through that opening. And when you stand there and you feel this, you become the bridge between Mother Earth and Father Sky, or what, however you want to call it, up and down, yin and yang. You become the bridge. When a person is laying down flat, which would be supine, if you will, on the floor in Shavasana posture to relax in the beginning or relax at the end, any good yoga practice should begin every class with Shavasana, which is resting. Too many new teachers let people just buzz out without doing the rest at the end. And that's when all the glue can come together that holds the pose together. So I always tell people, you have to go into Shavasana at the end, even if it's for a couple minutes. So you lay down flat, you envision those roots again, but growing from every part of your body that's on the earth. And then you bring the vision through the solar plexus, which would be the belly chakra there too, in your core, your chi spot, your little treasure chest, and you envision as you breathe that as you lift up with the breath, heavenly energy is coming into you, okay? When you do a triangle pose, there you go, you got your triangle. There's all sorts of shapes that we focus on as we're in the postures that are these sacred geometric shapes. Twisting, for example, is representative of spiral, which is another primary shape. The pyramid gaze, a lot of people say, you know, I really, really stare when I'm doing a yoga pose, and it keeps me, like if I'm doing a standing pose on one foot and that sort of thing. I now realize it's a pyramid gaze. It's energy horizontally from eyeball to eyeball, straight up to the point at the third eye. 40 years I've been doing this, and I never connected it in that way. Now, most of my life I've been able to, not at will, but see the auric field on some people some of the time. Not all the time, but frequently, and it's happened a lot. I always said that when I looked at the person, I pull my vision back, my physical vision, and look at them peripherally, and I use the vision of the third eye. I always say, too, to send out a stream of energy from your heart and from your belly button, which is your core, So I envisioned looking from four places, from my belly wisdom, my heart center, which is my love, my eyes, my physical eyes, and my third eye. I would send out a stream of four points, like a stream of four energy lines toward the person and envelop them in that. And that's when I see their aura beam out.
So in essence, you're surrounding them with the light, so to speak? Or are you just seeing that in that other person?
I'm saying that I use, it's almost like those are my binoculars, and that's how I focus on the person. Now, sometimes I don't have to do anything at all. It depends on the lighting quite often, too. Lighting mm-hmm. has a lot to do with it. If you're in a classroom environment, there's a white wall behind the teacher or the presenter or whomever, and a lot of times fluorescent lighting can really accentuate auric colors. You ever been in a gymnasium or a concert hall, for instance? And I don't know about jewelry-wise you, but sometimes women say, my rings always look better in certain lights. That's why certain jewelry stores have different lighting shown on the jewels. Well, certain lighting accentuates the aura of a person, too. So I'm beaming up, Scotty. You know what I mean? I'm mm-hmm. beaming out my own visual capacity and opening myself to see the aura, inviting myself to see it.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this something you see in all the students you are working with at the time, or is it just certain people, or how does that work?
Well, I can't control it.
So it may not be everybody in a class or anything like that, right?
Right, right. I know that when I'm actually seeing what I'm seeing is, if they were to sway from left to right, it moves with them. And it should, because it's their electromagnetic field. Do you ever remember a book and then later on a movie called The Celestine Prophecy by James mm-hmm. Redfield?
Oh, yes. I read the book, yes.
Yeah. The ninth insights numbers 1 through 9. He went to Peru, the manuscripts and all that. Kind of a archetypal cliches of subjects, if you will. And then there was the 10th insight. I think there was a third book, too. But he, and I believe his wife, produced the first and maybe the only movie about it, I don't know, called The Celestine Prophecy. And in that book, or in that movie, there's images of people learning to see auras at this farm that they go to, where they were sending healing energy toward the plants, and then they would compare the vitamin content of the plants where they sent love to the plants. They had other plants where they would send anger to the plants and the growth. They were measuring all that, measuring the vitamin content and so forth. There's some scenes in there that show what I think is the best representation of how auras look to me. And I would encourage some people to really check out that movie. It's worth seeing, called The Celestine Prophecy. And it's a little bit hokey. I think it's from the 80s. There's some shots you can tell it's filmed a long time ago. But it's got a beautiful message, and you can see what auras look like. And you can see there, too, that auras can reach out toward other people. It's people's energy fields. It can be in a negative way. It can be in a positive way. So I've gotten far afield, and I apologize.
That's all right. All very interesting. Right now, I just want to take time out once again to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Cindy Gray. She is a yoga teacher, writer, and handwriting analyst. And we're talking about yoga primarily right now.
Yes.
Now, when you are teaching yoga, does it matter how many people are in the class? Or, I mean, is it you try to keep it in small numbers, or it doesn't really matter? I mean, it's not lost on anybody, the fact that it's not perhaps individual training?
Well, I'm very flexible, pardon the pun.
Well, that's good, though, right? You're a yoga
so
teacher.
So I like to think that I can teach a class of however many students happen to be there,
mm-hmm.
you know. I think the most I've ever taught in a class is 40. So, but I tend to do the postures I like to be in the very middle of the room and have the students kind of fan out in a spoke-like fashion so that everyone doesn't... I don't like people to have to crank their neck around to see what I'm doing either. I would love to have an assistant, actually, that could kind of demonstrate in a way what I'm doing too while I adjust individual people. I do like to adjust people somewhat, but then that's their personal space too. So I always say, may I touch you, and you know, and so forth. But usually once I've worked with them for a couple of classes, then they know what they're doing somewhat, you know. It shouldn't be difficult. People make things so difficult.
Right. They make life difficult.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, depending on the person, I would imagine that they're not really flexible, and that is a benefit of yoga, right? You become much more flexible. Your
yes.
whole body moves a little bit better.
Yes. It's like spraying WD-40 on your joints.
Okay, that's what I
spine.
Need. Yeah.
Yep. And I've always prided myself in being able to teach a pose in a certain way. And then I'll say now, for those of you that would just want to hang in the pose just like this, just stay where you're at. If you want another a bit of a more challenge or what have you, then you can go ahead and add this. You can add the leg. You can subtract the arm, whatever you want to do. You should be able to, like a dimmer switch, turn the postures up and down. A good teacher should be able to do that. I pride myself on telling people to release the posture as they release the breath. A lot of people that have trained with me, I speak with them, you know, later on, and they say, you know, I took a class over at such and such a gym or at this rec center or whatever. The teacher doesn't tell you what to do. They just say, go into Trikonasana posture, and then they stand there. Or they don't say, on a deep breath in, extend the arms. They don't guide them. So I think there's a lot of emphasis in the yogic world on certification and training, but yet there's teaching skills involved that need to be learned. I've had a few over the years, recently certified people that say that they'd heard of me in the yoga community and wondered if I could participate with them or show them how I teach. And it's just like any subject, geometry, for instance, whatever. There are some people that know what they're doing, but they have a hard time sharing it with others.
Mm-hmm.
And I love to share information. So.
Right. Well, that is a big key to teaching. Obviously, you have to convey the information as best you can.
Mm-hmm.
Working with people, and I'm sure you take into account everybody's different. Everybody
yes.
learns at different rates.
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera. Do you work with individuals so that maybe they're a little bit behind, that you try to have them catch up with the group or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you just work with that person as best you can and let them develop on their own?
Well, I primarily teach in groups, but I've had some people that are brand new that come to a class that's ongoing, and they can tell that obviously some of the other people there have been with me for a long time, and they may want a private class just to kind of get a little bit more personal attention.
Mm-hmm.
But then, too, I should be able to recognize that person needs a bit of personal attention, but some people don't like to be called out. They don't want to
right.
be emphasized that they're
right.
not experienced or what have you. I always tell people, number one is you show up. You show up and you breathe. You breathe deeply and learn to relax. The art of relaxation is very difficult for most people in our culture. Sometimes the shavasana, which is laying down flat, your back is to the floor, your face is to the sky, it's supine. A lot of times people say, I get plantar and supine mixed up. Well, supine, think of sun, you're facing the sun. Plantar, you got your face on the planet.
Right. It's planted into the
exactly,
ground.
Yep. So I always tell people, you've got to rest afterward, because then the breath calms, the pulse calms, everything calms. And then all of the work that you've just stirred up, all the chi and the life force inside you, it's like a garden hose that's been twisted and it's got water going, but then when you release it, it goes chew, and it goes where it's supposed to go. It's the same with shavasana. I was teaching yoga years ago at a courthouse, actually, to the employees on their lunch break and once a week after work. And one gal, she confessed to me later, she says, you know, when I first started studying with you, you do the shavasana at the end. And she said, I know it was only going to be like 7 minutes or something, but it was the longest 7 minutes of my life. I'd lay there thinking, how long is she going to have us? And I'm doing a deep relaxation thing with it too. And the music is soft. It's not just silence and they're laying there waiting to get up. So she says, over time, she began to savor it. And she began to think, oh, I don't want to get up. Mm-hmm. I am so relaxed. That's when the physiological benefits of yoga can happen. The blood pressure starts to balance. Everything starts to flow. Your pulse rate begins to rest. That's when the calming effects, the hormones, the endocrine system begins to balance out. I did want to mention two things. I didn't want to run out of time and not mention that the yoga community in the world recently lost BKS Iyengar. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard about that. Some of it was on the news.
I heard it on the news.
Yeah, and he was, I believe, 95. He was an Indian man, and he taught Hatha yoga, which is the physical yoga. Yoga means union. Hatha means postures, basically. So there's karmic yoga, where you do good deeds. There's Raja yoga, the yoga of the royal path. All sorts of different types of yoga. Hatha is physical. And then any other types of physical yoga are under the umbrella of Hatha. So you've got your hot yoga. That's a Hatha yoga that's hot. You've got Ashtanga, the flow series. That's an Ashtanga. That's a yoga, a physical yoga that's fast moving and so forth. Yin yoga, really slow poses. You may hold a pose for 4 minutes, one pose. And you can stand there and be dripping with sweat if you hold a pose long enough. Anyway, so Iyengar was responsible for bringing a lot of Hatha yoga to the United States a long time ago. He has always been an inspiration to me. I've never met him. I've studied with a couple people that had met him and trained under him. So I wanted to kind of dedicate this to his memory. And then I did want to mention, too, that in February at the Song of the Morning Ranch up in Vanderbilt, I'm doing a sacred geometry and Hatha yoga class, a retreat. It's a 3-day retreat, and it's called Sacred Geometry plus Hatha Yoga equals Body-Mind-Spirit Connection.
Okay, quite a title.
And it's a retreat. It's February 6th, 7th, and 8th of 2015, which is a Friday and a Saturday and a Sunday. And it's an amazing place. So I would encourage people, if you're interested in really doing some really fun stuff and learning about this place, it's called Song of the Morning, and it's www.songofthemorning.org. So, and they've been around since the 70s up there, and I just recently discovered them myself. So,
and the gentleman's name again was that just recently passed away?
Iyengar?
Yes. I heard that he started that because he was in poor health as a youth. So,
yes.
Obviously, that can help improve your overall health as well, yoga?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have some students that might come to me that might be in their 20s, maybe their 30s. They can barely reach their knees, let alone touch their toes. I have some students that come that are in their 60s or 70s, and after a few couple years, or maybe even just a year or whatever, their range of motion begins to become more fluid and moving. Usually, I would say within, if somebody worked with me once a week, and I try to encourage people to take yoga off the mat, when you start learning about how to support your posture, how to think about how you walk, how your legs, the ball and socket joints are in there. I tell people, think about cross-country skiing, and you got to keep those skinny little skis in a track, or you're going to fall over, because the skis don't want to go left or right, they want to go straight. If you walk with a certain awareness, it can change a lot of things about your health too.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people, take a look at your shoes and observe uneven wear on your soles of your shoes. Take a look at that. And a lot of times people carry, there's a story about Gracie Slick from Jefferson Airplane a long time ago, and she went to a chiropractor or something with back pain, and he said, I can't really find anything wrong with you or something, and she ends up leaving. She hoists this huge purse, slings it on the one shoulder that had been bothering her, and she'd been carrying it to the same side. We tend to do things in favor the same side all the time. Even quite often a right-handed person, they could never open a pickle jar with their left hand or brush their teeth with their left hand. I always tell people, mix it up. And that's part of the sacred geometry of the brain, is the left and right hemisphere. And to try to share the load equally with your body.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's something you point out. Sometimes when there's a certain joint that gets messed up somehow, maybe a knee, you start to walk differently, and that creates problems with the hip or other parts. Right. And so, I mean, it's a downward spiral in that it can just manifest into something even worse than what you started with. But again, it's the way your body compensates for the pain in one area, and then eventually something else wears out, whatever the case may be. So I'm sure that this is something what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think yoga helps a person become more aware of how they hold themselves on the planet, how they hold themselves physically and also with their breath. And it does have a spiritual component. It can have, anything can have a spiritual component. It depends on, you know, if you see the sacredness in every day, and every day becomes sacred, you know. Mm-hmm. Cliche there, but it's true. It's what you put into it. So,
So people, though, once they practice it, they have better health, they walk better, they have better posture, things like this?
They sure have a chance to fix some things that are going haywire. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah, definitely. And sometimes, too, there may not be anything physically wrong, but there's so much tension. And by relaxing, your shoulders start to loosen up, your neck, you might think that your neck is not aligned properly, but it can be stress in the shoulders. We do a lot of angel wings in my class, a lot of pelvic tilts also. And I tell people, envision that your spine is like a old cast iron pump at a state park or whatever, the kind that you pump up and down, and that long handle. Envision your spine is a pump, because it is. And when you do pelvic tilts, when you lay down flat, you bend your knees, put your feet on the floor, and you just slowly, people always want to go into a bridge and get their whole back up off the floor and their rear end and everything. I tell them, no, plant your spine on the ground. Then squeeze your rear end and release. Squeeze, release, squeeze, release. It pumps cerebrospinal fluid from the tailbone to the brain.
That's what I need.
It can help prevent and slow down dementia, cognitive decline, Alzheimer's, all sorts of positive effects. When you do angel wings, that pumps the cerebrospinal fluid at the scapula, which is the very center of the thoracic vertebrae, where your shoulder wings are, if you will. When you do the two combined, you pump the CNS fluid throughout your whole spine. And that brings nourishment to the cells. And that's part of people's problems, is their cells are undernourished. They're often dehydrated. They're not getting micronutrients from healthy foods. A lot of people, though, are into smoothies now and doing a lot. There's a lot of growth, I think, in the world for many people. They're wanting to feel better. And that's why I say, if you feel like there's always been some connection between you and Mother Earth and other people and animals particularly, a lot of people have a deep, profound connection with animals, then I'd Google sacred geometry and check it out, because it's the recipe for mm-hmm. this web of life.
Right. So it would probably help lower a person's blood pressure, things like this. Do you work with their breathing?
Yes.
Does that help them, I guess, just relax them? The better they breathe, like you say, we have shorter breaths as we get older and just go through life. Does yoga help people with this?
Yoga helps in many ways in that regard, because it helps expand the muscles that support the rib cage, the intercostal muscles. The diaphragm is there. The rib cage protects the whole respiratory system. When you focus on pranayama or deep breathing, you begin to expand and contract. The breath goes all the way down compared to the upper lungs. So you clean out toxins through that. You build a stronger respiratory system. The intercostal muscles become more flexible. Ribs tend to break a lot less easily when they're supported by stronger muscles.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, too, as a person's focusing on the breath, they forget what they're worrying about. I've had so many people say, you know, when I came in here, not only did I have a kink in my neck and my knee hurt and I was angry at my wife or I was worried about my son, and I forgot all that. For just that brief period of time, your hormones are able to get out of the cortisol, adrenaline rush, you know, of life. And you're able to rest your being.
Mm-hmm. But again, people are gaining insight into the fact that they are feeling better. So that reinforces the fact that by going through yoga, obviously, it's just going to get better. and it's going to help them more further on in life.
Yes. Iyengar had a quote. I'm not sure if I can quote it exactly, but yoga helps cure what can be cured and helps endure what cannot be cured. And I believe that. I believe yoga has kept me sane in a crazy world. Like I say, I was a court reporter almost 15 years. I've had a lot of ups and downs. I've had a lot of personal challenges, and everyone has difficulties and all. I'm not saying mine's been less or worse than anybody else's, but I really feel that yoga has kept me grounded, has mm-hmm. kept my feet on the ground, has kept those little roots in that terrarium reaching for the earth, and has kept me breathing. I've had different things in my life happen where there was a crisis at the moment, and I thought, I am going to melt right here. And then I thought, breathe. Just breathe. And when you start focusing on your breath, that's your life link. So you get a hold. You get a hold of your ropes of salvation, if you will, and you get through it.
Mm-hmm. It sounds simple, but not always easy to remember in stressful situations. And
right.
that does help, something you touched on. It does help in stressful situations to breathe, because we breathe even less when
yes.
we're going through stress, because
yes.
we take shorter breaths.
Or
and,
you can hyperventilate.
Right. And
yeah.
the oxygen is not getting to your brain.
Mm-hmm.
You're not thinking as well as you should.
Right.
Things like that.
Yeah. There's certain poses in the beginning of class where we're laying on our backs. I use ties in my program that I've developed. And one of the things is your legs are up in the air. You've got your feet pushed into this strip of tie, basically, that's going across the bottoms of your feet. And you tend to rock. You just kind of rock from side to side. And sometimes people start to giggle because they feel silly, because they're a grown adult laying there on the floor rolling around. And I always say, you cannot be uptight and do this, because it's that powerful. It brings you back to almost a playful, definitely a playful, but more of a childlike feeling, not childish, but childlike. And it helps you just be.
Mm-hmm.
It can help you go back to the authentic self that's really under there, that gets trapped in the ego and gets driven by what you want to achieve or the burdens you're trying to handle. For years, I tried to get my daughter to do yoga. Oh, no, I'm not doing that. She wanted, kids want to get as far away from their parents as they
can
get,
right.
usually.
Yeah. The parents know nothing.
Yeah.
You know. Yes.
And now mm-hmm. she's coming around. She's 31, 30, no, she's turned 32. She's very interested in yoga now because she's starting to feel things too. Mom, my knees are hurting. I said, well, yeah, that's because your knees, first of all, aren't meant to carry as much weight as you've got on you. Hint, hint. I
yeah.
said, you've got to start.
You're subtle. You're a little subtle.
You've got to flip your legs upside down and put them up the wall. Lay them up on the chair. You don't have to do a headstand. Matter of fact, I tell most people, you don't need to be doing headstands. I don't believe the cervical spine was designed to hold the weight of the whole body, or we would be upside down walking around. So there's a lot of yogis, though, that will say, oh, it's the king of the asana. Is the postures are called asanas in Sanskrit, and that's the king of the postures, if you will. I used to do some headstands when I was younger and all, but I don't want to risk my neck just to do that. I can lay down and put my feet up the wall and get a really nice inversion, a very moderate inversion. And that's what I like to teach people, are ways to modify poses. We use blocks, those styrofoam blocks, the ties, often blankets. Sometimes, particularly men and often older people in general may have a hard time sitting in a cross-legged
exactly,
position.
Yes.
But if you put a couple blankets under your tush and get the hips up to knee height, all of a sudden they can sit. They go, wow, now this doesn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, there you go. Over time, we'll take a little bit, you know, you might have four blankets. A couple of weeks later, you've got three, then two. Next thing you know, they're sitting on their bum. They're sitting cross-legged, and they forgot that their hips wouldn't open like that. A lot of it's hip openers that we work on, hip and shoulders. There's a theory in yoga that the ankles and the wrists are like the windows to the body, and that the shoulders and the hips are the doorways to the body. And you've got to spray WD-40 in these hinges or things aren't going to be lubricated. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, too, take your internal oils before you come to class. Let's spread it around through your system. Flaxseed oil, olive oil, salmon, whatever, if you do fish oils. Whatever oils people take, they should take it in the morning before they do a yoga class. Mm-hmm. And envision those nutrients go into the cells, spreading throughout the system. You know, there's a lot to the mind over matter. You know, a lot of times you read about someone who was diagnosed with an illness, but they were wrong. But they start manifesting the symptoms. You know, so it's important to think positive thoughts and nurture ourselves with loving thoughts, because then the body responds accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Do you suggest people take some type of oil every day just as a dietary supplement to help them?
Pretty much, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, I take flaxseed oil. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you take that? Do you take
I put it in a smoothie.
Oh, okay.
Yep. I could mix it with a juice, you know, juice if you wanted to, or you could just swallow it whole. I don't like the feeling of oil. Unless I'm dipping French bread in it or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right, right.
But yeah, I'll make a smoothie, and I put flaxseed oil. I put lecithin granules in there. I put aloe vera juice in my smoothie every day. I drink about a quarter cup of aloe vera juice a day. If it heals burns, why not take it inside? It heals you from the inside out. I've been taking it for decades,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Do you notice any difference if you don't take it for a day or two, or is it something that you just get used to and it doesn't matter if you miss a day or two?
Well, that's a good question. I would think it'd probably be all right to miss a day or two. It depends on your circumstance. If you've got achy, arthritic joints, you know, does your car not need oil for a day or two? You know what I mean? A lot of times people are more focused on the lubrication of their car than they are their own joints.
Right. Well, cars are important to get you the stress-filled job
or
whatever.
To get you to yoga class.
Right. Well, that too. That's even better.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, I would recommend daily, unless you have an adverse reaction. See, I don't take fish oils because salmon doesn't agree with me. I don't know if I'm allergic to salmon, but I've never been able to eat it. It tends to make me want to gag. So mm-hmm. I have not tried it in decades. Mm-hmm. So I don't take fish oil because most of the time it's salmon-based.
Yeah.
You know?
And once again, do you want to give the information out for the yoga retreat?
Sure.
And
yeah.
Any information that you want to give out about yourself?
Well, again, my name is Cindy Gray. I'm in the Livonia area. And for more information about what we've been talking about, I could be contacted at 734-266-2734. That's my phone number at my office. And then I'm teaching a Hatha Yoga retreat on February 6th, 7th, and 8th, based on sacred geometry. And that's at the Song of the Morning Ranch, north of Gaylord, at Vanderbilt exit. So they could check the Song of the Morning Ranch website. I'm not sure if the winter retreat's on there. It might be within the next week or two, though. And they have all sorts of neat things going on there for people. So, yep, do yoga anywhere you can find it.
Yeah, it's a good thing, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And take it off the mat. Develop a home practice. 5 minutes every day is better than an hour once a week.
Mm-hmm. Right, consistency.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, Cindy, thank you very much for being on the show this month. I do appreciate it. Very interesting, very interesting. I'm thinking maybe I should get back into math, but that's kind of a long-term plan. I don't
know.
Not right
up.
Away. Yeah, right. But once again, thank you very much for being here.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Once again, I want to thank my guest this month, Cindy Gray, for being here. She is a yoga teacher, writer, and handwriting analyst, and we were talking primarily about yoga this show. And truly, truly amazing. I didn't realize how much numbers played in life and in the creation of life, but it is truly, truly amazing. And like I said earlier, I'm thinking about maybe I should start studying that myself. Truly amazing. Something that you don't always think about, but I do want to thank once again Cindy Gray for being here. Very interesting, and I do thank her a lot. She tells me it's her fourth time on the show. I'll take her word at that. I know she's been on many, many times, and I do appreciate every time she's here. Very interesting guest. So once again, thank you to Cindy Gray. I also want to thank my producer, Brandon McKay, for this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. He always helps me out, and I do really, really appreciate it. With that being said, I just want to say thank you for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
Hi, this is Jill Jack, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. Glad you're listening in.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the functified starship. Functified starship. Functified starship.
Stardate, it is Tuesday, October 21st, 2014. Ladies and gentlemen, it is 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Your DJ Commander Mark Anthony just flew in from the chocolate Milky Way, about 400 light years from the planet Earth. And we come in peace. We come for one reason. We came to jam. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the planet Funk.
Oh, God, dog. Why done broke my guitar? It just cold. Good gracious.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are aboard Spaceship Winterprise. This is your Captain Guitar, better known as Captain Flake. We're going to fly to the planet Funk. So just sit back.